Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Guru. From Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, text 34. What? That's what I was told. 34. Saraj Chashi Kariyavatam. He had me nervous. And what's today? The Rasa Yatra? What?
Rasa Leela.
Rasa Leela.
Tonight.
Rasa Leela. And that's what the verse is about today.
What will we do tonight?
Today's verse is about Rasa Leela. And so what's this about sweet rice and you put it out so the moon shines on it?
I remember, it becomes ambrosial.
It becomes ambrosial.
In the Krishna book.
Is it? In the Krishna book?
Yeah,
about sweet rice and the moonlight?
Yeah.
Oh man, I missed that.
Come in the morning, when you feel unlucky, you get little mercy.
Okay. Because when I first visited a temple, I was hitchhiking to Mexico and stopped in San Diego. And then I saw a relative at the temple, my uncle, Charlie Blankenship, who a lot of devotees know him in Hawaii. They call him Charlie Tuna. He was working on Narahari's sailboat. Anyway, he was there with his wife at the temple, and I stayed at their house for a few nights and read his Bhagavad Gita and gave me a stack of Back to Godhead magazines. And they also said something about somebody is cooking sweet rice and they're going to put it out on the roof to catch the moonlight, and I thought, this sounds pretty wild. So here we are, full circle. How many years later? 1975, getting close to 50, but what is that, 40?
Yeah, you're close, 49, almost.
40, 49? And I'm still 18 years old. All right, so just by chance, today's verse is about Rasa Leela. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Saraj Chasi Karay Mishtam.
Saraj
Chasi Karay Mishtam.
Saraj Chasi Karay Mishtam.
So I'm going to break this up a little bit. Saraj is autumn, Chasi of the moon. So Saraj Chasi of the moon in the autumn. And the moon was really big last night. Tonight's going to be full moon. It's the autumn season. Just by chance. Sharach Chashi Karai, by shining, Mrishtam, brightened. So what does that mean? Karai, by the shining of the autumn moon, the night is brightened. Sharach Chashi Karai Mrishtam. And remember, this is Uddhava speaking to Vidura about Krishna's pastimes. They're missing Krishna intensely. And so, even in the Bhagavatam, before going into the Rasa Leela, there's the whole description of autumn chapter. And there's a few more chapters, and then the Rasa Leela begins. But that's an important part. Manayan Rajani Mukhan. Manayan, thinking so. Rajani Mukhan, the face of the night. What's going on there? The face of the night. Oh, the face of the night is brightened by the autumn moon. Singing songs in the autumn night, brightened by moonshine. Yeah. Rajani Mukham, the face of the night. And Vishwanath, I read his commentary on this, and it's all this stuff about, there's a double meaning that Krishna is wiping the face of Radha and relieving her of her fatigue. He finds all kinds of things in the verses. Every verse to him has at least two meanings.
In English, the night means dark, or night means just a period of time?
Both.
Interesting.
Okay, Manayan Rajani Mukham. Gayan Kala Padam Reme.
Gayan Kala Padam Reme.
Gayan is singing. Kalapadam, pleasing songs. Reme, enjoyed. Gayan Kalapadam Reme.
Gayan Kalapadam Reme.
Srinam Mandala Mandana. Srinam, of the women. Mandala Mandana, as the central beauty of the assembly of women. Mandala Mandana. So Krishna, out of all the beautiful things, he's there in the middle. Mandala, this beautiful rings and patterns. Srinam Mandala Mandana. Sharachchasi Karamrishtam.
Sharachchasi Karamrishtam.
Manayan Rajani Mukham.
Manayan Rajani Mukham.
Gayan Kala Padam Reme. Srinam Mandala Mandanaha. Go ahead.
Sarasthasi Karayamrishtam.
Sarasthasi Karayamrishtam.
Manayan Randani Mukham.
Manayan Randani Mukham.
Gayan Kala Padam Reme.
Gayan Kala Padam Reme.
Srinam Mandala Mandanaha.
Srinam.
Translation. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed as the central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. We can read it together. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed as the central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. Purport, it's just two sentences long. Before leaving the land of cows, Vrindavan, the Lord pleased his young girlfriends, the transcendental gopis, in his Rasalila pastimes. Here Uddhava stopped his description of the Lord's activities. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Remembrance of Lord Krishna. That's all Prabhupada said about it. The whole Rasalila. Read it again. His purport. Before leaving the land of cows, Vrindavan, the Lord pleased his young girlfriends, the transcendental gopis, in his Rasalila pastimes. Here Uddhava stopped his description of the Lord's activities. So Prabhupada has this reluctance to bring out the Rasalila. Way back in 1975, that stack of Back to Godhead magazines that my Uncle Charlie gave me, one of them, there was an article. Well, it was taken directly from the Krishna book, and it was the gopis being attracted by the flute. And I read it, and I thought, well, this is kind of cool, but there are some things in there that I thought were kind of strange. And many years later, about 30 years later, I read that Prabhupada was not happy that they put that in there, in the Back to Godhead magazine. Don't put anything about Rasalila or like that in the Back to Godhead magazine. So I've got a lot of material about why he doesn't speak about Rasalila. And then as we read this, as we study all of these reasons, then it becomes like, all right, now we're ready to hear about this. So just jumping in, he's always saying the professional reciters jump immediately to the 10th canto and especially the Rasalila. So I drew a little comic of a guy in a suit and tie holding his briefcase and Acme professional Bhagavatam reciters. And he's jumping on, you know, the hopscotch thing, jumping immediately to number 10. You need to build it all up. Even Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Devotion, he's describing the five rasas. And when he gets to... Well, I'll just read. Here's how Prabhupada introduces the chapter on conjugal ras. Although such conjugal feelings are not at all material, there is some similarity between this spiritual love and material activities. Therefore, persons who are interested only in material activities are unable to understand this spiritual conjugal love. And these devotional reciprocations appear very mysterious to them. Rupa Goswami therefore describes conjugal love very briefly. So you'll notice the chapter on neutral love, Shantaras, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, each of them they're really big, they give lots of examples, but then when he gets to conjugal, he cuts it really short because most people don't understand it. So I'm not going to get into it here. And that's in the Nectar of Devotion. Like, this is like for really serious students. So even in that book, he trims it down. He writes another book dedicated to Madhurya Ras. What's that one? Govinda Lilamrita? Ujjwala Nilamani. Which is all about, Madhurya Ras. So Prabhupada, where does this come from? Like, why does he have such a strong distaste for it? Well, in his youth, as a child, his father was always bringing sadhus to his house. And he saw a lot of sadhus that were not really sadhus. But his father just felt like, if someone looks like a sadhu, if someone says they're a sadhu, I'm going to bring them in. I'm going to feed them. And I'm going to ask them to bless my son to be a devotee of Srimati Radharani. Prabhupada, he saw the good intentions of his father, and he saw the not so good intentions of some of the so-called sadhus. And it was because of that that when he met his guru, he recognized, now here's someone that is qualified. Here is a qualified person. This is a real sadhu. When Prabhupada was in Bombay and they were struggling to get the property and then struggling to get permission to build and going against practically the whole, well, half the city of Bombay seemed to be against them. Everybody was giving them so much trouble. So a few people became really close followers, and one of those people was Dr. Patel, that would go on walks with Prabhupada. And as one of the devotees asked Prabhupada, I talk with him, sometimes he seems like a devotee, and sometimes he seems like a Mayavadi. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's really hard to tell where he is, but he's a Mayavadi. But only by being in association with a devotee can a Mayavadi or anybody really make any spiritual progress. So Prabhupada kept him around, and they had very animated discussions on the morning walk. And sometimes it got really animated, especially when Dr. Patel would say, so-and-so, this sadhu says this, and Prabhupada said, no, he's not a sadhu. And Dr. Patel would say, how can you say that? He's very spiritual, he's very respected, and Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita says, Mahatmanas tumam partha, daivim prakritim ashrita, vajantyananya manaso. That a sadhu, a mahatma, is someone who's always worshipping Krishna. Vajantyananya manaso, satatam kirtayanto mam, yatantascha dridha vrata. This man doesn't say a single word about Krishna. In fact, when he speaks on Bhagavad Gita, he takes Krishna entirely out of the book. This man is not a sadhu, he's a demon. And Dr. Patel was like, I can't be with this anymore. I'm leaving. And he just walked away and said, I can't be around this anymore. And for 2 months, Dr. Patel didn't show up. Sometimes they would see each other on their walks, and Dr. Patel would just look the other way. And finally, after 2 months, he came to Prabhupada and bowed down. And Prabhupada said, so you've come back to join us? He said, yes, it is my nature to go with sadhus. And then Prabhupada said, and it is my nature to tell you who is not a sadhu. Just, he just jumped right back into it. He wasn't like, oh, I'm so sorry I said these things. He was just right on it. That's my nature, to point out who is not a sadhu. And so, I was reading, I don't know if we'll have time for it, but at the end of the Rasalila, there's in the Krishna book, there are all of the things that people, well, Shukadev, Maharaj Parikshit asked Shukadev Goswami, what is this Krishna supposed to be? The source of all dharma. And why is he doing these things that people may think is abominable? And so there's a lot of answers to that. And in there, Prabhupada says, these Mayavadis, they don't know who Krishna is, and therefore, they immediately just start speaking about Rasalila as if it's something material. And so he says, he throws people that speak very quickly on Rasalila, he just throws them in as they're Mayavadis. So I was thinking there's two categories, people who completely push Krishna's personality aside, and then people who just take his personality, but they take it so lightly, like he's one of us. And Prabhupada puts them both in the same. No, they're Mayavadis. Because they want to become like Krishna, is what he says. So before we get into some of the things, well, okay, I'll read one more thing. Because we were reading the Light of the Bhagavat. Our group, we decided we're going to read everything that Prabhupada wrote in chronological order. The first book that he wrote and published was Easy Journey to Other Planets. And then the one that almost got published, he wrote a whole book. It almost got published in Japan. Light of the Bhagavad, yeah. And so we just went through that, and that was so cool. So many good things in there. And in there is, let's see, where is that? Here we go. So text 33 of Light of the Bhagavad. There are waterfalls flowing from the hills of the forest, but sometimes water does not flow from them. So the waterfalls are not like ordinary rainfall. They are compared to great reformers who speak or do not speak as the time requires. Now, what do you think he's going to bring up in the purport? I think you all know. Well, I'll read the purport. There are two different kinds of religious preachers. One of them is called the professional preacher, and the other is called the acharya. The professional preachers are like the rainfall from the sky, but the acharyas are like waterfalls. The professional traders in Bhagavatam and Ramayana will speak from the portion of the scripture that will appeal to the mundane senses of the audience. Interesting, the professional traders, like, you know, that's their commodity. I've got these stories. If you pay me enough, I'll tell you the really good stories. That's like their commodity. Later on, he uses another phrase, mercenary. Everyone know what that means? Like, that's come into the news lately. Mercenary is someone who fights a battle for a fee. They're not emotionally involved defending a country. They are just, you pay me, I'll go and kill people. So he calls professional reciters mercenaries. For example, the professional Bhagavatam reciter will generally speak on the subject of Rasalila, which appears to the layman to be something like the dealings of ordinary men and women. Thus, the professional reciters earn money from their so-called admirers, but an acharya will never speak on Rasalila to the general mass of people. The Rasalila chapters of the Bhagavatam are the most confidential part of the scripture, and they are meant for advanced students of spiritual realization. In the Bhagavatam, there are 12 cantos, and the Rasalila is in the 10th, so before one comes to the 10th canto, the Bhagavatam tries to convince him of the transcendental nature of the absolute truth. Unless one has grasped the spiritual status of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is sure to accept him as an ordinary man and thereby commit offenses at his lotus feet by so many unwanted activities. The acharya is he who knows the scriptures well and teaches his disciples in terms of the disciples' capacity to understand and advance in spiritual realization. Therefore, he sometimes speaks and sometimes does not speak, just like Prabhupada here today. Only one sentence is about the Rasalila, and then he says, here Uddhava stopped his description of the Lord's activities. Just gives us one sentence. Of course, he explains the whole thing in the Krishna book, but that's after building it up. Apparently he didn't feel it appropriate to go into details here. The holy messages of Godhead have to be received from the realized soul and not from the professional man. Although rainwater and the waterfalls are the same, the water from the waterfalls has a different effect than ordinary rainwater. One should not accept messages from the professional men, as one should not accept milk touched by the tongue of a serpent. Milk is good, but as soon as it is touched by the snake, it becomes poisonous. The acharya, therefore, is not a mercenary order supplier like the professional reciter of scriptures. Okay, so that's what Prabhupada has to say about waterfalls. Well, The verse, I'll read the verse again. There are waterfalls flowing from the hills of the forest, but sometimes water does not flow from them, so the waterfalls are not like ordinary rainfall. They are compared to great reformers who speak or do not speak as the time requires. So regarding speaking, this is an unlimited subject, and I heard a guitar player recently saying, guitar is unlimited. You never finish learning it. There's only 6 strings. It just takes up this much space, but it's unlimited. The number of sounds, different styles you can play, and all of the different people that play it, you can tell, okay, that's that person playing, and you can tell by their style of playing. That's a guitar. Or a flute is just 6 holes, but it's unlimited. All of the different styles that humans have come up with, different parts of the world, different styles that haven't even been developed yet. Just 6 holes. And then a mouth hole. 7 holes. And a stick. It's unlimited. Infinite. But all of those different styles that humans have come up with, we can take the Bhagavad Gita verse, Rasoham apsukanteya prabhashme shashishurayaha pranava sarva vedesho shabdake purusham nrishu. So purusham nrishu means the ability in man, the talent, the skills that anyone has. So that is Krishna playing through everyone. So all of the skills of all of the humans that have ever existed, all the different styles of playing the flute, it's completely unlimited. And then Krishna, he's taught everyone how to do that. And then when Krishna plays it, it's a whole other level of infinite. Brings infinity to a whole other level. We're just playing around. We're taking a tiny little spark of what he has. He's the fire, we're the spark. Somebody can play that flute and just make your ears melt. It sounds so good. But when Krishna plays it, it says the demigods, who are like such skillful, artistic, talented people, they listen to it. Lord Shiva's listening. It says he can't understand. How is he doing that? It's inconceivable how beautiful Krishna can play that flute. Just 6 holes. It's unlimited. So Krishna is the source of all unlimited things. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. So he's perfect and complete. Akila Rasamrita Murti is how Rupa Goswami begins the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Akila, all Rasamrita Murti. Am I saying it right? Did I get it right? Okay. Krishna is Rasa Amrita. He's the enjoyer. He's the source of all rasa. Akila Rasamrita Murti. And Vedanta Sutra, Srimad Bhagavatam begins with Janmad Yasya Yata. Everything comes from him. So our tiny attempts, you could think of whatever romantic things you've done in your life, the silly things we've done as teenagers, and how inept and awkward they were. But Krishna does them all perfectly. I mean, as good as someone may be in this world with those kind of affairs, they just look tiny compared to Krishna. So that's a difference. Krishna is the fire. He's unlimited. We're just a little tiny spark, whatever skills we have. So Krishna's skills in rasa, in all of the 5 rasas, in exchanging them, Akila, he's everything. Everything really is a lot. Each of us is individual. We've all heard that. Like, if there's one tiny screw lying there on the street, it's worthless. But if it's part of a machine and it holds that machine together, allows the machine to work, it's super valuable. And so we are all just little bits of hardware laying around until we find our place in service to Krishna. Prabhupada says, one place he's talking about the Rasa Leela, and he says, the dance is going on, Krishna's dance, but we are all out of step. We need to hear the music and dance in step. I was trying to remember where is that from? Anybody offhand remember where that's from? I don't think it's in the Rasa Leela chapter. It's somewhere else. I could be wrong. It could be in there. But somehow to find our place, to get in step. And I just thought of another addition to that tiny screw missing in the machine. If you've got a machine and it's missing a screw, you could just go down and buy another one. But the thing is, each of us are individual and unique, and we each play some individual and unique part in pleasing and serving Krishna. And so, and Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He fully exchanges that rasa. So we have some place. We just got to find, got to listen to the music, get in step with the rasa dance. How much time? Okay. What else do we have here? All right, also while in Bombay, okay, yeah, usually when Prabhupada is talking about the gopis, he usually just gives two things, mostly one. Anytime he's talking about the gopis, the only story he tells is they are always in anxiety thinking of Krishna being in the forest, tending the cows, that he might hurt his feet. That's pretty much it. A couple of times he tells the story of Krishna having a headache. So that's the main things he says about them. He's just driving that point in. They're concerned about Krishna. You're only concerned about Krishna's happiness. That is the most important part of this Madhurya Ras. They're not in it for their own pleasure. Prabhupada keeps repeating those same two stories over and over again. Mostly the one about the feet. Worried about Krishna hurting his feet. The gopis appear to be simple. They're not philosophers or yogis. But when the gopis appear in Chaitanya Leela, they appear as brilliant scholars of the six Goswamis. They're writing volumes and volumes of books that are so deep and just like you may meet some devotee who did some amazing thing back in Prabhupada's time, and you talk with them and you think, wow, this person's like really simple. They're not as deep as I thought they would be, but their depth is in their surrender to Prabhupada. And thus they were able to go to a foreign country and open temples and do amazing things just out of their surrender to Krishna. When you speak with them, it's like, I don't know much. They don't know many verses. They can't recite things. They can't play mridanga. But they're surrendered, and that's their qualification. So same with the gopis. Well, similar to the gopis. I mean, they've got all artistic everything, but they appear like country people. And have you seen country people in Vrindavan? Like, you know, they just have one or two sets of clothes. They wash them every day. You never really wash all of the Vrindavan dust out of your clothes. They look really simple. They're out working hard, taking care of cows. Taking care of cows means you're cutting some grass, I remember they used to have those machines, it would turn, it would chop up great big sickles. Remember those things? Those are scary. push the grass into it, chop it into bits, and collecting cow dung, slapping it on the wall. These are really simple people. And these are the people that Krishna chooses to be with. That's one of the points in at the end of the Rasalila, addressing Maharaj Parikshit's question, how can Krishna do this? Krishna is not interested at all in anything material. Krishna is entirely spiritual. He's only interested in people who love him. That's what draws his interest. These are just girls picking up cow dung and slapping it on a wall. All right. What else do we have here? Of all the rasas, well, we won't go into that. Read this for about 10 minutes. So Maharaj Parikshit asks, Krishna appeared on the earth to establish the regulative principles of religion and to curb the predominance of irreligion. But the behavior of Krishna and the gopis might encourage irreligious principles in the material world. I'm simply surprised that he would act in such a way, enjoying the company of others' wives in the dead of night. So this is from the Krishna book. This statement of Maharaj Parikshit was very much appreciated by Shukadeva Goswami. The answer anticipates the abominable acts of the Mayavadi impersonalists who place themselves in the position of Krishna and enjoy the company of young girls and women. In his statement, Maharaj Parikshit has used several important words which require clarification. The first word, jugupsitam, means abominable. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who had invented himself to establish religious principles. Why then did he mix with others' wives in the dead of night and enjoy dancing, embracing, and kissing? According to Vedic injunctions, this is not allowed. Another word used here is apta-kama. Some may take it for granted that Krishna was very lusty among young girls, but Parikshit Maharaj said that this was not possible. He could not be lusty. First of all, from the material calculation, he was only 8 years old. Apta-kama means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-satisfied. Another word used is Yadupati, which indicates that Krishna is the most exalted personality in the dynasty of the Yadus. Another word he used is Suvrata, which means to take a vow to enact pious activities. Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill and his killing of great demons like Putana are all obviously extraordinary activities. Similarly, the rasa dance is also an uncommon activity and cannot be imitated by any ordinary man. An ordinary person engaged in his occupational duty, like Arjuna, should execute his duty for the satisfaction of Krishna. That is within his power. Arjuna was a fighter, and Krishna wanted him to fight for his satisfaction. Arjuna agreed, although at first he was not willing to fight. Duties are required for ordinary persons. They should not jump up and try to imitate Krishna and indulge in rasalila and thus bring about their ruin. One should know with certainty that Krishna had no personal interest in whatever he did for the benediction of the gopis. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, namam karmani limpanti, Krishna never enjoys or suffers the results of his activities. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about he's creating universes and destroying universes. And he says, that karma doesn't touch me. Creates everyone and then dashes everyone to bits with catastrophes. He says, karma doesn't touch me. And he has no attraction to it. Every time when Krishna is being presented, the six opulences are brought up. And of the six opulences, here the important one would be the opulence of renunciation. He has everything, and he can renounce everything. He has no interest at all. Even Bhishma addresses Krishna as the greatest of brahmacharis. Bhishma took a vow of brahmacharya for his whole life. And he said, Krishna, you could walk away from all of those girls. It was not out of any bodily interest that he stays with them, as Prabhupada says here. So namam karmani limpati. Krishna never enjoys or suffers the results of his activities. Therefore, it is not possible for him to act irreligiously. He is transcendental to all religious duties and principles. He is untouched by the modes of material nature. He is the supreme controller of all living entities, whether in human society, in demigod society, in the heavenly planets, or in lower forms of life. And he is also the supreme controller of material nature. Therefore, he has nothing to do with religious or irreligious principles. Shukadeva Goswami further concludes that the great sages and devotees who are washed clean of all conditioned life can move freely, even within the contamination of material nature, by keeping Krishna within their hearts. In this way, they do not become subject to the laws of pleasure and pain in the modes of material nature. How then is it possible for a Krishna who appears by his own internal potency to be subject to the laws of karma? Did everyone follow that? Did anyone get it? It was kind of a long statement, but a really good point. Who would like to? Yes, repeat it in your own words. Want to try? Want me to read it again? All right, here we go. Great sages and devotees. So this is Shukadeva Goswami answering Maharaj Pariksit's question. Great sages and devotees who are washed clean of all conditioned life can move freely even within the contamination of material nature by keeping Krishna within their hearts. In this way, they do not become subject to the laws of pleasure and pain in the modes of material nature. How then is it possible for Krishna, who appears by his own internal potency, to be subject to the laws of karma?
That's the verse, actually. The great personality has no fault.
So if we can walk through this world without being subject to pleasure and pains and, you know, the basic whips of material nature, because by remembering Krishna, then how could Krishna himself, who is, you know, pierced by his own potency, how could he, he's what helps us transcend material. So how
could
he be under the control of
material
nature?
Good job. Yes, thank you. And
I quoted earlier the verse, Namam Karmani Vimati.
Where is that one? Second chapter?
Fourth chapter.
Fourth. Namam Karmani.
I do not have any aspiration to do any karma.
Chapter 4.
Anyone who knows, understand this, also will be free from the action of karma.
Mm.
And the next chapter is also...
Is the microphone working? Just moving too quick.
Where he's talking about how he's creating a story of the universe over and over again. So that's not karma.
Udasina vadasinam masakam keshu karmashu. Chapter 9, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So by remembering Krishna, we can become, because Krishna is so purifying, we become free from sinful acts, sinful desires, just by remembering him. So how can Krishna be sinful? And Krishna's name is so powerful that it helps us in controlling our own mind and senses. Okay, should I move on? More Krishna book. Krishna, the super soul of everyone, is already within the body of everyone. Therefore, if he sees someone or embraces someone, there is no question of impropriety. So he was already within the gopis as a super soul. If he embraces them from outside, what's the difference? He's already there in their hearts. Some ask that if Krishna is self-sufficient, why did he at all manifest the pastimes with the gopis, which are disturbing to the so-called moralists of the world? The answer is that such activities show special mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. The gopis are expansions of his internal energy. But because Krishna wanted to exhibit the Rasalila, they appeared as ordinary human beings. Okay, now that's the second time this came up. Internal energy. We throw it around so much, but what does that mean? And why does he keep saying that? Back about the one Krishna, just by remembering Krishna, we become purified. So how could Krishna, who appears in this world by his own internal potency, so it's the external energy that is driving us to act in unhealthy ways against our will. Rajaguna Samudbhava. Yes. So Rajagun, the modes of nature bring about tamas, bring about kama, krodha, lobha, etc. Yes. And so, but Krishna appears in this world by his own internal potency. So it's the external energy that causes us. We are also the internal potency, but we're very tiny. Again, we're really tiny. We get pushed around by the material energy, daivi hyesha, gunamayi, mamamaya, duratyaya. So this is, Krishna says, this is my maya. Daivi hyesha, gunamayi, mamamaya, duratyaya. And it's duratyaya, it's very difficult to overcome. Mameva ye papadyante, mayam metam tarantite. But by surrendering to me, you can easily cross over it. Gopis are untouched by it because they're surrendered to Krishna. Krishna is untouched by it because he's the source of it all. And that was part of that whole presentation several paragraphs back. He's the source of the modes of nature. He's the controller of living entities here, in the higher planets, in the lower planets. He's in charge. He's in control of everything. Nothing controls him. But we are just like that painting with the three modes up in the clouds, and working the puppets, and one guy's shoveling, and the other guy's waving his cane at him. So that's us. Maybe we're the person shoveling, maybe we're the person yelling at someone, but we think we're doing it. Gunai karmani sarvasha. How's that one start? Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. So under prakriti, under the inferior external energy, we think we're doing everything, but gunai, the gunas, karmani, are doing sarvasha, everything. Gunai karmani sarvasha. And because of ahankara, we're thinking, I'm doing it. And because of ahankara, we think Krishna's just like me. He's being pushed around just like I am. We're being pushed around by time, by so many things. But Krishna, he's not even being pushed around by time. So that's internal energy. By his internal energy, he's coming. He's not being forced by the external energy. And then here we read, the gopis are expansions of his internal energy. But because Krishna wanted to exhibit the Rasa Lila, they appeared as ordinary human beings. What's the Brahma Samhita one? Ras Bhavitavis. How's that one start? But they're expansions of Ananda Chinmaya. Ras. Okay, give him the microphone. Let him explain that. Pundarik. Yeah, let Pundarik. We want to hear him. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhis. How that relates to what
Nijarupataya Kalabhi. Kaloka Evana Visati Akilatma Bhutto Govindam Adipurusham Tavahamadam.
Yeah, and how does that relate to internal potency? Krishna appearing by his internal potency. The gopis are expansions of his internal potency. Isn't that in that verse too?
No, that's in 4.6.
4.6.
Ajo vision of Vayatma Bhutana Nishara vision. Prakritim Shamadistaya Sambhavami Atmamaya.
Okay.
By my internal potency I come down.
Sambhavam Yatmamaya. Okay, chapter 4 Bhagavad Gita again.
So the gopis are extensions of Radharani's Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to read a little more, and then we'll open this up even wider.
But is it like we have to make a distinction? Krishna is eternally independent by his own right. We are never. We are also complete, but our completeness is not complete on our own right. We are complete under Krishna, depending on Krishna.
Connected to Krishna, like the
depending
little, like the little part of the machine.
Depending on
him. Yes.
Otherwise, we'll never become free. Alone.
Yes, that's the limit of our infinite limits.
Anisha Jiva Rupena. These are the verses. Anisha Jiva Rupena. Prabhupada gave a whole purport. Just one word. Anisha Jiva Rupena. Anisha. Jivas are never controlled. Never controller.
Hmm.
Simple little word.
Where was that?
In Bhagavatam. Second, tenth, third chapter, I find one part of Jiva Nisha Rupena.
Alright.
Soul is eternally dependent on Krishna.
Alright, we're about to read a quote from the second canto. Right here. Prabhupada brings this in. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Pariksit also explains that the pastimes and activities of Lord Krishna are medicine for the conditioned souls. If they simply hear about Krishna, they become relieved of the material disease. They are addicted to material enjoyment and are accustomed to reading sex literature. But by hearing these transcendental pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, they will be relieved of material contamination. How they should hear and from whom is also explained by Shukadeva Goswami. The difficulty is, okay, now here we go. Difficulty is that the whole world is full of Mayavadis. And when they become professional reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam, and when people, without knowing the effect of the Mayavad philosophy, hear from such persons, they become confused. Discussion of the Rasa Lila among people in general is discouraged because they are affected by the Mayavad philosophy. But if one who is advanced explains and people hear from him, certainly the hearers will be gradually elevated to the position of Krishna consciousness and liberated from materially contaminated life. Prabhupada was so careful. He was at someone's house in India and they said, please Swamiji, explain Rasa Lila to us, tell us all about it. And he said, not right now. And they said, please, we want to hear. And he said, you may be qualified to hear it, but I'm not qualified to speak it. It was just so, like, did not want to take it cheaply. So we should discuss it. It needs to be understood. But it needs to be presented in the proper way, as he says here. If one who is advanced explains and people hear from him, certainly the hearers will be gradually elevated to the position of Krishna consciousness and liberated from materially contaminated life. I've heard devotees present it very tastefully and going deep into the Sanskrit meanings, and yeah, it's beautiful, and you do not at all get the wrong idea of what it is. Again, Prabhupada keeps repeating that same thing. Gopis are interested in Krishna's pleasure. They're thinking about him when he's gone. They're worried about him stepping on thorns and pebbles with his bare feet while he's tending the cows. That's what they're thinking of. Another important point is that none of the gopis who danced with Krishna were in their material bodies. They danced with Krishna in their spiritual bodies. All their husbands thought that their wives were sleeping by their sides. The so-called husbands of the gopis were already enamored with the influence of the external energy of Krishna. So by dint of this very energy, they could not understand that their wives had gone to dance with Krishna. What then is the basis of accusing Krishna of dancing with others' wives? The bodies of the gopis, which were their husbands, were lying in bed, but the spiritual parts and parcels of Krishna were dancing with him. Krishna is the supreme person, the whole spirit, and he danced with the spiritual bodies of the gopis. There is therefore no reason to accuse Krishna in any way.
Is that in Krishna book?
That's in Krishna book, yes. What do you think of that as an attorney?
That's part of that. It's an elegant argument. You could say, well, the part of them that belongs to their husband is still lying there. So they didn't do it, you know. My client
didn't commit the murder. Only the part of him that is already, you know, belongs in jail committed it. But my client himself should not be condemned.
Confirmed, confirmation. Yeah, that's a big one right there. Why isn't that first and foremost?
Simultaneous oneness and difference. So, because that's promulgated, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very mercifully gave
us that aspect of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So you could say that the gopis were with Krishna, literally, totally.
Oh, achintya bheda bheda tattva. Okay,
they were
there, but they weren't there.
Yes.
Okay.
Does it say there actually how old Krishna was when he? I've heard that he was eight years old.
8 years
it. Old.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so ordinarily there's no sexual, you know, development at 8 years old.
Yes, that was also mentioned. Of course, Krishna appears older, and he's only in. And Alvin, let's see, what did I just read? Different ages. Sometimes, the last time I read, I think was 11 years old. He goes to Mathura.
Yeah.
11 and a half. But Jiva Goswami says, 11 and a half, you multiply 1.5. It's 16.
Another thing, I can't remember where this is from. But it said, just like if you try to explain erotic principles, you know, to a five-year-old, they'll never understand it. So in the same way, in a conditioned state, we can never really understand, you know, this transcendental love affairs between the gopis and Krishna.
Yeah. And what was it that Prabhupada said, trying to explain what this particular fruit tastes like? What was the fruit? And he said, Somebody described it as
drinking sugarcane
sugar cane strained through a Muslim's beard.
Yeah.
And what was the fruit?
I don't know.
So he said, trying to understand Krishna while you are in material consciousness will be something like that.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing is when there started, it was called the Gopi Baba Club. And Srila Prabhupada really got angry at that. One of the things that they asked one devotee if they wanted to come join him, he said, "Oh, I'm going to go to the Bhagavad Gita class." And they said, "Oh, we don't go to Bhagavad Gita class. We just want to hear about Krishna and the Gopis." And Srila Prabhupada really got mad at that part, that, you know, it's the same Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita as dancing in the Rasa dance. You know, you can't make a distinction that, you know, this Krishna is higher or lower. It's the same Krishna. And I was at one darshan at New Vrindavan, and a devotee, he just started asking the question. He says, you know, in our sarup, and Prabhupada just cut him off. He said, don't bring sarup. He said, first you follow the four regular principles. What is this talking of sarup? Yeah, so we have to know our own position.
Upendra Prabhu, 1968, his conversation with Prabhupada, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly, that when he said, if our relationship as a father and son, how we can develop as a lover? And Prabhupada paused for a few moments and then he says, actually all the relationships are complete and perfect. If you feel you are a lover, in maturity of your devotional practice, it will reveal. You don't need to artificially. So Prabhupada did not dismiss with everybody's cases. Upendra Prabhu's case, he literally says that eligibility qualification. So few other cases like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one question, Prabhu. Our liberated souls are those who've returned to Krishna, eternally exist with Krishna. Are they independent of Krishna?
No.
No.
We are never independent. That idea should be clear.
What I mean is that those in the spiritual world, they have immense potencies. And they choose to be in Krishna's pastime. It's a choice. Because they understand. They understand that, okay, I want to be with Krishna. So they chose to be with Krishna. So they choose to be with Krishna. On that basis, that Krishna is the Lord of all rasas. So, but they seem to have certain potency of their own. Don't they not? Don't they? And so therefore, but there is out of choice, they wanted to be Krishna.
I don't know if I'm fully understanding the question. Do we have some independence?
No,
well, we have.
No, not the conditioned souls. Those who are liberated and who eternally exist with Krishna.
Yeah.
Do they have, are they independent?
Well, I think what you're driving at is, can they surprise Krishna by doing something that Krishna didn't anticipate? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but you see, we rely on Krishna down here for everything. But they rely on Krishna because suppose once Jiva is liberated, he fully understands his constitutional position, or with Krishna as well. And then on that basis, that Jiva will choose to be with Krishna out of choice. We, Jivas down here, we rely on Krishna for everything because he's the supreme controller. And up there, he may not be the supreme controller because they don't even know he's God so much. They don't even want to accept that. So, I was just wondering along those lines.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm really understanding what you're trying to get, but we're driven by desire, let's see, how does it go? In the beginning stages of bhakti, up to Raghunuga, what moves us along is shraddha. Adau shraddha, tata sadhu, sangata, vachana, kriya. Everything is just more of an increase in shraddha, in faith. When we get to the level of Raghunuga bhakti, what makes us move on is, what's the word? Greediness, desire, a strong desire. That's what makes us move further along the path in Raghunuga. So that's always going to grow. Greediness to please Krishna, to be with Krishna. So I'll put that there. And that can influence Krishna. The devotees can influence Krishna. And then there's always reciprocation. So I want to read one more point here. Oh boy, it's already after 9. Okay. All right, here we go. Shukadeva Goswami concludes this episode of the Rasa Leela by pointing out that if a person hears from the right source about the pastimes of Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, and the gopis, who are expansions of his energy, then he will be relieved of the most dangerous type of disease, namely lust. In other words, one who actually hears the Rasa Leela will become completely freed from the lusty desire of sex life and elevated to the highest level of spiritual understanding. Generally, because they hear the Rasa Leela from Mayavadis, and they themselves are Mayavadis, people become more and more implicated in sex life. The conditioned soul should hear the Rasa Leela dance from an authorized spiritual master and be trained by him so that he can understand the whole situation. Thus, one can be elevated to the highest standard of spiritual life. Otherwise, one will be implicated. Material lust is a kind of heart disease, and to cure the material heart disease of the conditioned soul, it is recommended that one should hear, but not from the impersonalist rascals. If one hears from the right sources with right understanding, then his situation will be different. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Krishna's Rasa Leela ki jai, Srila Prabhupada's explanation of it ki jai. Hari Bol.